am Caroline, a yoga teacher with a special interest in menopause based in Edinburgh.
And hi, I'm Dr. Claire, a GP with a special interest in menopause based in North London.
Together we are the Menopause Sisters and we're here to guide and support you through your menopause journey. Welcome to the Menopause Sisters show with myself, Caroline, and my sister, Dr. Claire. And today we're really excited to welcome Ruth Devlin, who founded Let's Talk Menopause to raise awareness and provide accurate information on the menopause. I'd love, Ruth, for you to begin by perhaps just telling us a little bit more about yourself and your journey into menopause and how your work has progressed over the last few years.
Hi, well, thanks. First of all, thanks very much for having me on. Lovely to meet you both, finally. I'm a registered nurse long time ago. Like a lot of people, got into the menopause education side because when I started going through the perimenopause quite a few years ago now, I thought, not enough information out there. Much more nowadays, obviously. But got to the point where I just really wanted to know more. And when I started research, so I researched it for about 2 years, did Cathy Abernethy's courses and then started to set myself up. So I just found there was just an enormous need for whether it's, you know, general public or general practitioner nurses or GPs, whoever it is, there's just a massive need for it. So.
And also your book. Now, this is something I can put my hands up and say I bought it for my husband. I still don't know if he actually, I don't know if you've read it. It was an add-on to his birthday present list, which I'm not sure was actually really on his list. It was on mine. But I wondered how that came about, because I thought that was quite unusual to write a book around menopause that was really aimed for men or at men. And I wondered at the time when you were writing it and putting it together, was there much out there? Maybe.
Yeah, there were quite, always been loads of books on the menopause out there and getting more and more. Now we've got this cohort of celebrities reaching a certain age group as well. But every talk that you do, if you're doing it within public, private or sectors or the community, it's predominantly attended by females, isn't it? I mean, always. So, and the amount of times attendees would say, gosh, I wish my partner, my husband or my male colleagues could listen to this information, you know, the world would be a better place. So I said, well, okay, that's, you know, it happened so many times. I thought, right, we'll just write a short guide. So I sent out a questionnaire to confidential questionnaire. I said, don't worry, I'm not going to name any names, to friends and family and colleagues, male colleagues, and said, right, okay, answer these questions if you want to. Won't be offended if you don't. Would there be a need for this sort of thing? All of them replied within such a short period of time. It was quite gobsmacking, even the most awkward of characters, and said, absolutely, provide something which is short, to the point, no fluffy bits, loads of hyperlinks, something I can get to grips with. So I thought, right, okay, well, may as well just do that. So I did try and keep it really short. So you can read it, you can speed read it in under about an hour if you get going. That was my aim.
It's fantastic because it is, like you say, it's a reasonably short, easy read. It's straightforward. It's to the point. The facts are in there. There are lots of links and signposting. And from my point of view, I remember looking at it thinking, yes, this is exactly what I can give my husband actually at the time, because for myself in perimenopause, I wanted more detail, or I wanted, you know, 5 or 6 books, you know, that kind of thing. However, for him, it was just giving him that shorter read and just an understanding. So I'm impressed everybody came back quite quickly.
They did. And with, you know, just wham. I think about just maybe 1% were down on people not replying. So it was pretty impressive. So obviously feeling the need.
And I think that's what I felt when reading your book, Ruth, is because there is very little out there for men, actually. Mm-hmm. And the information is the information that is out there is very geared to women, and there's a lot of information out there, isn't there, at the moment?
A lot.
But very little about what's out there for men and how men can approach the perimenopause and menopause, and how, you know, what are the right ways to do that, and are there wrong ways? I wonder whether or not you can sort of give us some nuggets of information from that book for our listeners to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no right or wrong ways. That you just have to take your own individual situation and think. And particularly, I mean, if you take the workplace, for instance, you know, there's loads of younger male managers now who are having to support, you know, large female workforces through this transitional period. And that can be really tricky. And actually, well, I have said it's really tricky. I have found that a lot of the younger male managers are much better at coping with it than the older ones, because they've, you know, had experience of their mothers or their sisters or other relations going through it, and everybody's much more aware of it now. So it makes it easier for them. But I think ways to cope, ways to present it. I think it's making sure that they're informed as much as possible. And if the more informed they are, the more they know what potentially could be happening, everybody's going to have their own unique experience, then the easier they're going to be able to understand that, aren't they? And just, it just makes it easier on all fronts.
And when sort of moving, because we mentioned briefly there about how, you know, there may be younger men in the workforce that may be a bit more adept at dealing with perimenopause. But just thinking about the workplace a little bit, is there a way that we can encourage women to start that conversation? Because I know we've spoken, Karen and I, previously about menopause cafes and women setting up kind of groups that they can another about, but I think that we need to involve men more in these conversations, and I'm just wondering if there's sort of a way we can approach these conversations at work and what your thoughts were about that.
So having worked with multiple different organizations and a huge variety of different approaches, and as I said before, you know, you very rarely get men coming onto calls. The way we've got around that a lot of the time is to provide men-only talks within organisations. Now, that works really well. And, you know, people will say, well, nobody's going to come to that. Well, they do, because they know that that session is for them. And they know that they're in a comfortable place where that they can, you know, they don't feel self-conscious asking what they would perceive to be silly questions or maybe embarrassing questions for women who might be on a call. So they're always, I used to think, oh gosh, these are going to be really dry, you know, situations, but absolutely, they're absolute opposite. Everybody's really interactive. You can't shut them up sometimes. It's fantastic because they just want to know more. You know, they genuinely are concerned either about people that they're helping to support in the workplace or partners at home. So, you know, don't underestimate how interested men are, actually, because it really does obviously affect their quality of life as well. And that's what I point out to everybody on a tour. It's just, it's not you that's going through the menopause on your own. It has, you know, it has feelers, doesn't it? It just affects all relatives, you know, your kids. If you're not coping with it, then it has an impact on your family life, on your work relationships and things. So
it's that ripple effect, yeah. Isn't it? And I think it's interesting what you were just saying there, Ruth, about a kind of safe space for men as well, because, you know, we often talk about safe spaces for women, but actually for men it's equally important to be able to feel confident in sharing and confident in talking about it. But like you say, asking those questions that they may feel a little bit embarrassed about asking, not knowing, which many women, you know, feel embarrassed about asking and not knowing, because, you know, we're still finding more and more out as well. So I think that's a really interesting point of, you know, bringing men together and enabling them to feel confident and kind of held in a space to learn more.
Yeah. And if you provide those within organisations, then, you know, that the root, you know, word will get around. That's been on the ball. So people, you know, appreciate that, appreciate management taking that step to, and it makes it everything more inclusive as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, other areas that you can look at, as well as providing sort of safe spaces for women and men within an organisation to go and comfortably talk out with information sessions, you can also appoint a key figure within your organization, whether you want to call them a menopause champion, whatever you want to call them, somebody who's more informed. They don't have to be an expert. They could be, you know, they could be just more empathetic. So somebody who's a good listener, somebody who knows all the support that you can put in place within an organization. They know their menopause policy inside out, the reasonable adjustments they want to put in place. So things like that, just really easy to do. But it's just a matter of somebody taking the initiative, really.
Yeah.
And when we think about menopause, we often think about treating it holistically, don't we? And actually involving men in that conversation is, I guess, in a way, indirectly part of that holistic approach to managing our symptoms. Because, like you say, it can affect all of our relationships quite significantly.
No, definitely. And that is key, isn't it? Taking that holistic approach and knowing that there's no bias in one particular direction, because we all have a different experience. And, you know, one certain way of coping might suit one person and and a certain another person. But it's making sure that you do lots of little things, I think, and taking, you know, really looking at your lifestyle choices, making sure that you really understand the impact of too much caffeine and alcohol and not enough exercise and not enough hydration, making sure that you realise the benefit of complementary therapies to reduce stress, or stress, as we all know, is going to exacerbate any symptoms. But then you've got that safety net as well, that we can come and see somebody like you, Claire, who, you know, can give that additional support if you need to go down the HRT route. So, you know, you've got, and you two are obviously ideal combination here, because you've got the yoga on one side and you've got expert on your side, and you've got the doctor on the other. So that these two things marry so well together, but it's making people realise that they have to do lots of little things themselves, and then their symptoms will be relieved slightly.
It's that self-management, isn't it? There was somebody that came to my class, it was a few months ago now, and she'd mentioned before class she was really suffering with some night sweats and hot flushes over the last few days. And I said, oh, that, you know, thanks for telling me. I'll just slot in a few things here. And I got a message the next day saying I didn't have a night sweat. I've not had a hot flush for 24 hours. And it's really interesting, isn't it? And she said, what did you do? You know, I said, well, I just, you know, there's a few things I know that would probably help. Yoga, full stop, like you just said, you know, reducing stress. That could be another complementary therapy. It doesn't have to be yoga, but something to be able to reduce the stress levels, which is likely, not always, but likely to reduce or lessen your symptoms. So, as you say, it's knowing that you can manage it yourself, and perhaps HRT is, you know, will take the edge off if that's a route you want to go down, but knowing that there are lots of different little things you can do.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, HRT is a really valid option. You know, a lot of people are still really scared about HRT, as you know, Claire, but it's a really valid option for the majority of people. But it's putting everything into perspective, isn't it? And making sure you've done everything yourself as well, and you continue to do everything, even if you decide to go on to HRT. I think that's the important thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, thinking about lifestyle is so imperative, because it's almost sort of empowering ourselves, isn't it? It's about the empowerment of what we can change.
Yeah.
But feel better. And I often say to them, you know, HRT isn't always the magic bullet. We can't always rely on HRT as being the thing that's going to sort your symptoms out. It's a combination approach, and we need to look at, you know, if you're drinking 3 glasses of wine a night, HRT is probably not going to help with that hot flush as much as you'd want it to. Mm-hmm. If you're not moving as much, then that's also going to be detrimental. But conversely, I'm not saying we should all move lots, because we know that in the perimenopause and menopause, women have this lack of motivation. They just get a bit sort of despondent. And actually just acknowledging that as a symptom, and saying that that is okay to feel like that, but there are things that we can do to make that better. And lifestyle and holistic approach is beneficial. I wanted to briefly, well, not briefly, because I could talk about it for ages, and I'd like to hear you talk about it for ages. thinking about CBT as an approach as well, and what your opinion was on cognitive behavioural therapy for symptoms of the menopause.
Oh, a no-brainer to engage with any form of CBT if you possibly can, on any level. And I think the most off-putting thing for a lot of people is that word therapy, from experience. And I think people think, well, I don't have a psychological problem. I'm going through the perimenopause. And I think if we could rename it, it would be wonderful, because it's trying to get across to people how simple it is to engage on a certain level, and that you don't actually need a therapist to start. You don't need to go to group therapy, which is really hard to access anyway because of COVID. But, you know, there's a really good self-help guide by Dr. Melanie Smith and Professor Mara Hunter, which is a really good starting point. I'm sure you'll put that up on the link at the end. And it's a really easy read as well. And it explains it really simply, just the practical tools that you can engage in, and maybe thinking about some of the strategies looking forward, you know. But it's a good way of starting to look at it. Just even things like simple paced breathing, and how much that can lower your stress levels. And that gives, I think, just little things like that can give people that element of control back. And it's the feeling for a lot of people of like the loss of control, isn't it? And it's you know, just they don't feel themselves. They don't feel like it's their own body anymore. They just, I don't like feeling like this. I don't usually feel like this. And it's, so if you can give them some sort of control over something like, okay, this isn't going to cure your symptoms, but it can help to diffuse and reduce the impact of hot flushes and night sweats. If you just simply do a little bit of pace breathing, and then that can be a starting point for people to try and do, start doing things for themselves.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the things that I think CBT can be really helpful about, is obviously changing the way you, your brain thinks about things. But also, when we think about pace breathing, it's something that we can take anywhere.
Absolutely.
It's portable. So it could be within the workplace. You could have 10 minutes out and just, you know, do some pace breathing. You could teach others to do that. And actually that just, that lowers, it brings down those stress levels a little bit, brings down those cortisol levels a little bit, and it can really help just rebalance you. And yeah, it's not for everybody, as we know, but then nothing is for everybody. You know, there's lots of things that work for us and lots of things that don't. And it's just finding the combination that's right for you.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I think absolutely, completely agree. But it's just, it's getting across how simple it is. It's not, you know, it's not difficult, and that you can approach it yourself and you don't need to go down the route of waiting on waiting lists for therapists and things. Yeah,
I'm slightly biased with the breath work, obviously, being a yoga teacher.
Well, obviously.
Obviously. But as you've just both pointed out, it's something we have with us all the time. Mm. And there'll be one technique that probably resonates with you more than another. You know, whether it's a cooling breath to soothe a hot flush, or just a focused pace breath to time, or just feeling into the breath. You know, within yoga, you know, all the ancient texts, it was breathing and meditation. That's what it was. None of these yoga poses, they're just all, they're quite recent. So, you know, coming back to that idea of being able to breathe well as well, and support all the body systems in the body. And if we can breathe well, and what does that mean? Breathe efficiently, you know, breathe deeply, then we can support our endocrine system. We can support all the hormones. We can support our cardiovascular system, our heart. We can support the respiratory system, obviously our breathing. We can support all the systems in the body, particularly the immune system as well, in helping us to be well and to be fit and to be healthy. So I had to get in there just for a moment with the breath work.
No, I knew it.
Phil, it's so incredibly important. So, yeah, no, it's brilliant.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
But other CBT techniques, something I've done with somebody before is kind of literally write a list of things down, of things that I have to do in my life, you know, things like just generally having boys and, you know, doing the washing or the cooking or whatever, you know, all those things that you do, making that list and just looking at that list and going, right, what's necessary? What can I just drop? What can I hand over? And that was a fantastic technique I did with somebody, Angie Garton, a couple of years ago. And it was brilliant because actually it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. You know, the house doesn't have to be perfectly tidy. As long as that gets washed by that day, that's, you know, it's all these little things. And what just can I hand over? What can I hand over to somebody? And that was a really simple for me CBT technique, or kind of mindset technique.
Mindset.
You know, what can I shift? What, you know, I don't need to control all of this because this exacerbates my stress levels and therefore some of my symptoms. So what can I consciously let go of, as it were, and hand over? And I know that obviously is slightly easier said than done, and you might not have a partner, or there might be other things going on in your life, but just trying to find a kind of, I guess, a light or a path through this.
Yeah. And various things will work for different people. So, yeah, like doing, and also maybe just doing a brain dump, you know, at night to help your sleep patterns. That can really work for some people. Journaling, which doesn't necessarily work for others, but it's just focusing on how you do think and how perpetual it's that repetitive negative thought process can become. And then just sort of helping people to break down their thought processes can be really, really an interesting way to approach it.
Yeah. Is there an example, Ruth, that you can give us of a way of doing that, whether that's writing it down or even just thinking about it? I'm putting you on the spot now.
No, that's okay. Well, anybody who's done CBT will know about the hot cross bun format. So, you know, you're breaking down. So it's literally four positions that you go through, from your thoughts, your feelings, behaviour to the physical response. And you have to break down. So say, for example, if you're having a hot flush and your immediate response is to get irritated by that or angry about it because you have really bad hot flushes and you're not coping with them and you've not figured out your triggers or coping mechanisms. So you're just thinking, oh my goodness, this is just going to get worse. And by the fact that you're getting irritated by it, you're increasing your cortisol levels. So that's going to exacerbate it and make it worse. And, you know, then that's just becomes almost what's called a vicious cycle. So by approaching this and thinking, right, okay, I know I'm doing this. So somebody points out that you're doing this and say, right, okay, what's your behavior when this happens? And if you're consciously trying to break it down and think, okay, instead of getting irritated, what I'm going to do is think, right, I can't get rid of this hot flush, but I can reduce the intensity of it by doing some simple paced breathing. And that, and because a lot of people say, breathe through your hot flush, and you think, right, what on earth do people mean like this? But if you genuinely do just breathe through your hot flush, it gives you that little element of control, and it's helping to reduce your stress levels. And then that starts to then change your behavior, your physical response, and hopefully puts you on the track of just a bit of a better life, quality of life.
Yeah. I can see how that might work with palpitations as well, because that kind of idea of, you know, palpitations and the anxiety rising and going, right, well, I know why I'm getting the palpitations. You know, my estrogen's fluctuating here, or my progesterone, whatever it might be. And so actually I know that's okay. So I'm just, as you say, I'm going to do some paced breathing, and I'm just going to allow it to slow down or pass.
Yeah.
So it's a very simple technique to work through a lot of symptoms.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you can, you know, once you've learned these basic tools and strategies or techniques, whatever you want to call them, they're such good skills to be able to transfer into any situation, not even if you're just, you know, suffering from the menopause. It could be, you know, if you suffer bereavement all of a sudden, or if you're in a stressful situation at work or you're going for an interview and you're, you know, anything like that. It's they're really useful tools to have under your belt.
It's control again, isn't it? I know I keep and empowerment, but actually having the ability to take back control is the first step in managing all of these symptoms.
Yeah, definitely, just knowing the path that you want to go down. And I think for a lot of people, because there is so much information on the internet, isn't there? And it gets very confusing, and people get a little bit muddled, and then they get drawn into forums and all these sorts of things, which it's good to share information, it's good to share experiences, but sometimes they're not that helpful. Sometimes, you know, maybe some of the information isn't that accurate, and then you start going down a rabbit hole, various track. And I think just getting really good coping mechanisms, which really work, knowing what you can do for yourself, just can be a really good starting point for people. Just basic things about nutrition and hydration and caffeine and alcohol levels, and making those conscious decisions for yourself. And then you can start thinking about other complementary therapies, and, you know, and then if you need to, thinking about HRT.
Yeah, absolutely. And thinking about that rabbit hole that we can get drawn down, we all do it, don't we? We all kind of put something online and then it leads us down a different path. Do you have any tips for both men and women out there in terms of looking for information? I mean, obviously we've got your website, Let's Talk Menopause, and we've got the book, but I'm just wondering whether or not there are tips that we can share with men and women about what to look for, what to look out for, and what to avoid.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you mean resources where people can?
Yeah.
I mean, I think a really good starting point is the Women's Health Concern website, the Patient Out of the British Menopause Society, and they've got fantastic fact sheets on there on any topic, whether it's HRT, whether it's palpitations, whether it's CBT, and that can be a really good starting point. And it's, I think it's essential, if anybody's looking at any resource online, you've got to look at whether it's a document or whether it's a website, look at when the you know, when it was written, and you know, who's written it, are they accredited to write it, is it updated regularly, and that sort of basic thing is really important, which is, you know, the Women's Health Concern is. And I think Menopause Matters is an excellent website. If you're a clinician, they've got healthcare professional of any level, they've got really good information on there, as has the British Menopause Society. If you're prematurely menopausal, you want to be looking at the DAISY Network, which is a fantastic supportive charity. And again, if you've got one of the five gynae cancers, you want to be looking at the Eve Appeal. That's a brilliant resource. Endometriosis UK. And then in Scotland, one's in England, you've got the NHS Inform website, which has just had their menopause platform put on as well. So again, all these things, they're really good resources, recognised resources where you can go and have a look. Yeah, mine's just a chatty blog. It's just not replicating any of these things. It's just getting it across in a different format.
It's really interesting, actually, the work you've done with, because obviously you're a registered nurse, so you kind of having your, you know, a lots of menopause should be done in primary care, shouldn't it? It should be done by our nurses, by our GPs, and yet that's not always the case. And so you're kind of bridging the gap in a way by providing the information on your website. And am I right in thinking you also run courses? Is that something that you also do as well? And can you tell us a bit about those?
Yeah, so majority of the time organizations will get in touch with me and say, right, we've got staff to educate on this, want to back up our menopause policy by providing information and education. And I can tailor courses to any size or any, you know, a specific group that needs to, whether that's the public, private or third sector, and work, and also to work within the community as well, but also worked with NEST, NHS Education Scotland, on helping to educate the general practice nurses. So a lot of people think there's no education going on out there for GPs and nurses, but there is an enormous amount going on. It's just slowly filtering through, and lots of people are getting more up to speed. Definitely with everything.
I often say it's the nurses that sometimes know the most, actually. It's often start with your practice nurse, because, you know, they're often doing your smear tests, your blood tests, whatever it might be you need. And it's often a great place to start for signposting or information, or just have, you know, asking a few questions.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're in an ideal position, aren't they? If you are, as you say, going in for a smear, you can immediately start talking about genitourinary symptoms, and it's an ideal opening, saying, you know, do you think you've got any problems in this area? Because so many people put up with these symptoms, and it's just it's only when you get used to talking about them, like we do, that you just think, you know, I don't mind talking about anybody to them. And if I give a men only talk, I will talk to them about them as well, because those are the very symptoms that are actually going to affect their relationships. So, but it's that you've got a captive audience there, and it's you know, they need to just take that opportunity and say, right, have you thought about X, Y, and Z? And these things that you can do. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I noticed I was low on my Vagifem this week, and I didn't quite panic, but I was like, oh, right.
Yeah.
With my brain fog, I need to write that one down and stick that post-it note on my laptop to make sure I get my repeat prescription. But as you say, you know, it's mentioning we are used to talking about these symptoms, talking about these issues, and it's engaging other people with them. I had some friends around, it was a girls' night on Friday night, just for dinner, which was lovely. And it was really interesting, because there's somebody sitting next to me, good friend, same age as me, so 46, 47, I can't remember how old I am. And she was saying, so how do we know if you're perimenopausal? And it, of course, created a brilliant conversation, because around the table, all very similar age at different stages, this, what about this, it could be, you know, I said, actually, you might be just that third 20% or whatever it might be that just sails through this, you know. But there was a really interesting conversation that went around that table because somebody's had a really hard or tough journey, somebody's just not there yet, and actually talking about all of this is just really helpful. So those subjects that we often say are taboo, but particularly the subjects around sex, you know, sort of sex and dryness, really, really always worth mentioning and just repeating, I feel, on our program.
Oh no, definitely you can't talk about them enough, because so many people don't want to talk about them, do they? And as I said before, and it's just, and I think it's making people aware of how normal they are to experience that, not unusual. Yeah. It's really normal. You're not, your body's not failing in any particularly dramatic way. It's just how, you know, your body's aging and evolving, and you just got to go with the flow. You literally do have to just go with your body. And you know, as I say, you know, thinking about the word dryness, well, if you've got any other area of your body that's dry, immediately reach for moisturizer, but just don't slap on your body moisturizer or your hand lotion. It's very sensitive skin there. Make sure that you've got that, you know, moisturizing lubricant, which is designed for the area. And it's a big business, like any other moisturising business. There's a whole variety out there which will suit somebody's, you know, individual physiology. You just have to find the right one for you and then make it part of your daily routine. You know, as one person said to me on a call, she said, oh, my God, my morning routine is half an hour already. I don't think I've got time to do that. I said, well, it'll take you 2 minutes to apply this and you're going to be an awful lot more comfortable, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, that has the impact of making you more comfortable, but helps with sexual intercourse, helps with, you know, contributes to your low levels of libido. Because I think that's a really interesting topic, don't you, that a lot of people will think, well, I've got low libido, I need testosterone. Well, there's loads of other different contributing factors as to why you've got low libido. You know, it's to do with your relationship, how your body's feeling. Make sure you're getting that vaginal estrogen in there. And explaining to people is a tiny, people are so scared of actually having the vaginal estrogen. I don't know if you prescribe it often, Claire, but it's, you know, I presume you do. But it's trying to get across to people to actually try it and then persist with trying it. You know, they maybe try it for 2-3 days and go, well, that didn't help. Well, no, it's such a tiny amount. Yeah, goodness me, you need to keep it going for at least 2 weeks, if not 3 months, before you might see a change.
It's so interesting, isn't it, having these conversations with women? Because where I work, there's a multiracial, multinational demographic, and it's sometimes very often the case where I have an interpreter in the room, or I'm on language line with an interpreter, and actually you can tell, you've just got this sixth sense that what you're saying isn't being interpreted fully.
Oh, how interesting.
Sometimes, and many interpreters say to me, well, there isn't a word for that, so we have to think of phrases that we might use. And down below is a phrase that I hate,
yeah.
A phrase that we use. And many women have tried. So I have to say, I hand out vaginal estrogen like Smarties a bit these days.
Marvellous.
But vaginal estrogen, you know, we know doesn't work immediately. But as soon as it does start to work, women go, oh, it's resolved, done. I don't need to use it anymore.
Oh, I know.
To explain that to women, to say, well, actually, you do need to, this is lifelong, this is maintenance, this is fine, this is safe, this is good.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, because I know we spoke about trying to keep symptoms and the perimenopause a positive step, but for many women, actually, mm-hmm. it is a real taboo. They just don't talk about it, and the thought of talking about your vagina to someone you don't know, let alone showing your vagina to somebody you don't know and having contamination, is just a big no-no. And so that's another kind of big barrier that I think I'm desperately trying to break down within our practice. But it's you know, it's a long-term goal, I think. I think there's years of misinformation that we've got to undo.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It is having those awkward conversations, isn't it? And making sure that the sensitive sort of person is comfortable talking about these sorts of things, and just getting across how normal it is, and that it is long-term treatment. It's not just a short-term treatment. But also there's other things that they can do as well, things that, you know, they can get. You know, think about emollient creams, shower gels, things like that to use in the area. That's something else they can do. They can just access them from the pharmacist, or they can have them prescribed. And that helps as well to retain that level of moisture. So it's an interesting topic, never ending, having to talk about, because it's a constant challenge to get people to actually admit that they're experiencing these symptoms, that they do need help and that they can do something about them.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
On the back of that, Ruth, if you been, or I should say, have you noticed a huge change in the last 2 or 3 years? I know we have. Mm-hmm. In people, and as you said, the celebrities reaching a certain age have obviously brought it into the limelight, and that has helped. But just within your work and the people that you have been educating and doing courses with, is there a little bit more knowledge? Is there still that kind of need for more knowledge?
Yeah, I think people are definitely getting more informed. Absolutely. And there's much more going on, particularly over the last 2 years, much more going on within the workplace. So many more organisations have come to me. They've already got their menopause in place, or they've got it, you know, they've got a draft copy in place and they're just wanting a bit of advice on it. And they genuine intentions of providing support for their employees, whereas before it was maybe let's just tick a box. Now it's a very different approach. It's very much like, we really want to support our employees, we really want to provide that continual care. We're not just going to do a one-off event, we're going to make sure that we provide that drip feed of information for years and years to come, and we're genuinely going to put those reasonable adjustments in place. But also people who come on calls, they're much more informed themselves. Where they're getting their information from sometimes can be a little dubious. So that's something, a little bit of a challenge. Oh, I've heard this. Maybe I ought to be doing that. You know, so you've got to counteract that. That adds a little challenge. But no, genuinely more at ease to talk about it as a topic, and realizing that it's becoming less of a what we call a taboo topic. You know, it's just, and you just have to say to people, look, you've got to see this in the light of, this is a normal transitional period. You know, you think about other times when your hormones fluctuate, like puberty, and some of the symptoms mirror going through the menopause, you know, menstrual cycle settling down, irritability. You know, I've got a teenage daughter, I remember her going through that, door slamming, headaches, you know, all these sorts of things. You know, it's not so bad when you're pregnant, but it's for a lot of people, but it's just a transitional period. You've got to approach in a certain way and think, right, we're just going to get through this.
And it affects half the population. So, you know, as we often have said, that's the other thing. It's not a 1% of the population. It's half the population. And so as we talk about it more and more, I'm hoping this filters down to the younger generation as well, not to overwhelm them when they're going through puberty, but to have this understanding there's something at the other end, as it were, as well.
Yeah, I think for me, that's the biggest challenge, is trying to educate the younger population so that you don't get that percentage, that 1% who do experience premature menopause not going attended for too long. And that's one of the biggest challenges. So if you're in the workplace, I'll say, look, you don't just put this out to somebody around the age of 51. You're wanting the 20, 30-year-olds to hear this as well. Let's get people, you know, diagnosed quicker on the endometriosis front and get people really getting help when they need it. And I think it's really hard within school, because you're just going to get this closed expression. It's really hard to put that in place. But if you can sow a tiny seed in somebody's head, you know, of recognition of like, oh, well, I'm going to go through another transition around about this age. And, you know, just key flag symptoms. Like if you miss the period for 3 months, go and see somebody. You know, it's up to you to go. Nobody's going to phone you up and say, oh, I heard you've missed your period for 3 months. It's up to you to go and do it. It's trying to get that across as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. But also, you know, that, you know, in that kind of realization of for girls, I'm going to have periods. Well, they're going to stop at some point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and just having that, as you say, planting that seed is incredibly important. Just so, as you say, you catch the premature menopause that might happen. Because we've spoken to somebody who went through menopause, I think she was about 15, 16, wasn't she? And and she just thought it was normal. You know, she thought it was part of puberty. And it took a long time to work out what was going on and seeing a few different doctors. And so, as you say, it's really important to plant these seeds because, you know, we're thinking about all the same things, aren't we? We're thinking about hormone replacement for younger people and protecting bones and heart and everything else, all the same things, but at a much younger age.
Just briefly to mention, you know, we obviously want to empower ourselves as patients, as women, as partners, whoever we are. But I also think we've got a bit of work to do, haven't we, in educating our healthcare professionals, particularly our GPs. And, you know, we know GPs, myself included, do a wonderful job. But we, you know, I was never taught about menopause or perimenopause. So I think it's really important that we also, you know, we're attacking this from both sides. We're empowering ourselves as patients, but we're also giving our healthcare professionals the tools to feel confident in managing this too, so that going forward in a combined approach.
Just making sure that within each practice there's somebody whose interest lies within women's health, who's a little bit more informed, so that people got somebody to refer to is really important. Yeah, but one key area I think is really important is, you know, making sure that you people don't sort of get stuck in a time zone, time warp sometimes, because I think a lot of us, like I feel, I mean, I'm in my 50s, but I still feel inside like 15, like not 15, like 19 or 25, you know, in my head. And then you get a shock when you see yourself in the mirror. But it's realizing that you've got to move with your body as it ages and evolves. And I think that's really important on the dietary front, on the nutritional side, because so many people get frustrated, don't they, by the weight gain and the bloating. And, you know, you've got to explain to people that your body's needing slightly different elements of nutrition when it gets to this stage, and that you can't replicate your diet in your 20s and 30s. You can't have those fasting diets. You know, you've got to keep that metabolic rate going. You've got to, you know, just keep everything going a little bit more. You've got to take a little bit more care and attention is what I'd say. But don't get hung up on fatty diets and things like that. Just feed your body what it needs, which is really important.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm really glad you've mentioned that, Ruth, because I think there are so many women out there that, as you say, get frustrated with that kind of bloating. I call it my muffin top. And, you know, that just kind of area and just going, but everything I do doesn't work. And having that understanding that any sort of faddy diet is just not going to help, because it's going to put your body under stress.
Yeah.
And so, you know, under that situation, you're likely to, you know, retain more water, retain more fat, and just like you say, have that understanding of how your body is changing and what it needs. And, you know, we need what I think is 200 less calories or something around the age of the mid 40s upwards. Mm-hmm. It's not very much. Our metabolism has closed, you know, has beginning to slow down. So we're not talking about cutting out meals at all. We're maybe just not having that packet of crisps, or, you know, not having that extra glass of wine. It's just these little things, and just thinking about that holistically as well.
Yeah, I know, it makes a big difference. And focusing, you know, it comes to bone and heart health and brain health, focusing on what your body really needs. So it needs lots of calcium and magnesium. It needs that vitamin D. It needs a protein rich diet to, you know, promote the natural collagen production and things. You know, people are like, I'm not going to eat protein every meal of time. Well, it doesn't have to be enormous amounts. You know, you can get it in so many different formats. And just switching up your diet a little bit. You don't have to dramatically change your diet, just adding lots of little extra goodies in there, which will help.
Absolutely. Changing those ratios just very, very slightly, and doing it very, very slowly as well. You know, nothing dramatic. So these changes happen very gradually and just feel a little bit easier or easeful, as it were. Yeah.
Yeah. And if it's something, I mean, it's easy to find out a lot of the well, for the majority of it, it's not easy sometimes for some people, but for the majority of it, it's easy to find out which foods are causing the bloating. And again, it's that conscious decision, isn't it? Right, okay, yeah, I can give up the scones. I can give up the bread for a while. Maybe that's what's causing it. You know, I can supplement that with something else, but that's their decision. And a lot of people would go, well, I can't do that. I was like, well, carry on being bloated then. That's your decision.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. Yeah. No problem. It's an informed decision. It's a food diary. I was talking with a friend about a food diary, and it's just doing her head in at the moment, having to keep her food diary. She's just exhausted by it, but it is actually helping her work out what's not helping her. And she said, well, I'm exhausted with it, you know, I've worked out all these little things that have been really, really helpful. And I think it's, you talked to, we very briefly, I think at some point mentioned triggers, but you know, many women just have a hot drink and it brings on a hot flush. It's not even necessarily the caffeine. So it's just beginning to find out, even just work out what those triggers are, whether it's a stressful situation, it's a type of food, it's something you're doing, and then being able to adjust that and making those informed decisions. You know, I still love a glass of wine, but knowing that that might bring on my joint pain and muscle ache the next morning. And that's fine, I can make that informed decision. But as I say, I'm not going to be doing that every night. Otherwise, you know, I'm going to be feeling very grumpy.
Yeah, no, definitely. I definitely get gin and tonic ankles in the morning. So it's like, you know, well, it only takes two nowadays. I'm just such a lightweight, but it's having, making sure that you have those nights off, isn't it, from alcohol and realizing that, oh, it's wonderful to get a good night's sleep. And then sleep, there's a whole another topic as well, isn't it? Just giving, I just say to people, making sure you give your body a chance to sleep. So definitely. A lot of people look at you with a blank expression, what on earth do you mean? Well, sitting in bed with your laptop, with a horror movie on and a glass of wine, with your phone on speed dial is probably the worst thing that you can do. So, you know, take out all those LED screens out of your bedroom, shut them down an hour before you go to bed, and give and do some yoga. There we go.
Some breathing, some deep relaxation. Yeah.
I love this conversation because, you know, all these things are things that we obviously have conversations with women about all the time. And it's the difficulty of knowing that what you did before is not going to work now.
Well done. Yes. Yeah.
It's that change. And again, coming back to CBT, it's the change of, well, I'm going to have to really change what I'm doing. And I can't eat that pizza and get away with not putting on 2 pounds in the morning. I can't, you know, whatever it is for you, it's just the change, isn't it? None of us particularly. Well, some of us are better with change. I'm certainly terrible with change, but realizing that it doesn't always, it just needs to be looked at, doesn't it? You just be a bit more mindful about what you're doing and just take those small steps. Don't leap into the unknown, but just really look at yourself and make a few small changes rather than lots of big ones.
Kind eyes, I was going to say, actually, as well. Sorry, Ruth, I was just going to say kind eyes, because actually it's hard to change habits that you have been perhaps glued to, whether it's cake or, I don't know, something you just, whatever it might be, whether it's diet, nutrition, movement, you know, whatever it might be. It's really hard to change when you've been doing something for 40, 45 years or whatever it might be. And so just giving yourself that little bit of kindness and going, nothing too dramatic. I'm just going to start small and just doing it small steps.
Yeah.
Ruth, if you could give us, we always ask people for top tips towards the end of these shows, and I just wondered, it can be anything, it can be treatment, it can be what can I ask my GP, what would be your sort of three or four top tips
about
this stage in life, about management, whatever it is, what would be your go-tos?
Yeah, well, as Caroline said, I would say just start being kind to yourself. Give yourself a moment to think about yourself instead of everybody else. Not known as a sandwich generation for anything, are we? I would say definitely move more. Think about not just moving from your waist down. So many people exercise from the waist down, they forget about their upper body, and then they've got stiff necks and shoulders. So think of all those muscles and just gently move. You don't have to go out and run marathons or do anything. You just calmly move and do a nice yoga routine, or even just small amounts of movement throughout the day is really beneficial. So definitely get used to moving and just get to know your body. So really get to know what's going on in your body and accept what's going on and then react to what's going on, I would say. And then just take that holistic approach.
And if you'd like to find out a little bit more about Ruth and Ruth's work, it's letstalkmenopause.co.uk. And you've got some signposting on there as well, and a really helpful blog actually as well, Ruth, with some top tips in there.
Thanks very much. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Not at all. It's been lovely chatting to you. Gosh, that has flown by. I can't believe the time. Well, it's very nice to finally meet you both. We managed to pinpoint the time.